Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 14, delivered on March 22, 2017. The title of this lecture is Stock Valuation.
Today, stock valuation. I have this idea that you went through a hard drive erase reformat over spring break. It's just a suspicion of mine that basically there is a very large black hole into which information used to be, and then it's just kind of gone poof, snap, and it's not there anymore. So I'm going to have to go back over some things, especially in this lecture. It gives me a chance, because this is stock valuation, and I'd already talked about this to some extent, I can go back over it again, and at first you're going to look at me and you're going to say, got nothing, I got nothing. And then slowly it'll begin to rebuild in your mind what was going on, what I did. Okay, and if you'll bear with me one moment here, I'm going to bring up a couple of... I begin with a stock screen. Now, to remind you, we're just going to use it. Yeah, I know. I got to wait so I can not accidentally go to the wrong place here. Hang on. There you go. After that fiasco I had in the other class, there was a real bad. I did a search engine for something, and the so wrong result came up. Now, if you were to look at this, and I do a, let me turn down the lights here a little bit, and if you are to look on the top of this and get rid of all the clutter that is so popular with websites today, you'll see that somewhere in there you can tell that the market actually had an up day. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that this was a quiet day, and then I'm going to ask you for some information about why, how you see that it was a quiet day on the street. But that'll come. You notice that it was generally a day that was an improvement over the day before. You see, most of the major indices, S&P 500 was up, NASDAQ was up. Interestingly enough, the Dow was down a little bit. But notice that these are very small increases. The dollar amount is really irrelevant. Again, remember that it is percentage changes that matter, not dollar changes. Because a dollar going up on a stock that's $10 is a lot different from a dollar up on a stock that's $100. But now, let's go through and let's look at a couple of situations here. And I'll look, for example, at JCPenney. JCP. Now, you were gone when some news came out about JCPenney here in town. They're closing the store in the Eastland Mall as part of their consolidation. Essentially, that mall is going to be a ghost town before it's all said and done, I'm afraid. But now, let's look at JCPenney and see if there's any life left in the company. We're after trading hours, so there are going to be some things that are zeros that is unfortunate for us. Okay, JCPenney. Was this JCPenney? Well, I guess so. Okay. Now. start out just with some basics. Madam, up or down day for the company stock? Huh? Down. A little bit. About 0.71%. Not a major thing. After hours, it's recovering a little bit. There's a few bargain hunters. That's what I would see. And I'm going to just talk to you like an analyst. And you're going to hear the words and you begin to get the lingo. It's like we do in all of our cultures that we live in. We pick up the lingo from the people who use it. So I'm just going to say things. And if you don't understand, just hit me and say, look, fat boy, I don't understand what you said. I'm sensitive about that. My mother called me that, you know. Anyway, the point there being that, okay, I see that in after-hours trading, there were some bargain hunters picking up some of what they saw as a possible deal on the stock. It had gone down a little more. And that's something that you always look at after-hours. Are there bargain hunters going after the stock, or are they staying away from it? It's sort of like you see a dumpster. If there are people in a dumpster behind a restaurant eating the food, well, that's pretty good food. But if you see even the rats walking away from that dumpster, you know that it's probably bad food. So I see the bargain hunters here, so I'm not really worried about the stock price going down. What I am a little concerned about is that, okay, I'll bid and ask or zeroed out for the day. God, that irritates me. Okay, now, is J.C. Penney, sir, is J.C. Penney near its 52-week high or 52-week low?
Low.
It's near the 52-week low. As a matter of fact, it's testing the low. Now, we're going to see this again in a little while here. What I usually recommend is that you watch a stock at this point. It is probing. If it doesn't go through that neckline on the bottom, that means that it was just testing it, and it doesn't want to go through. It's like one analyst years ago, an old school guy, said stock is like a teenager. Just because he lights a match near the curtains, that's not what should worry you. It's if he actually sets the curtains on fire. Then you've got an issue with the kid, you know. But if it's just testing you, as you know, stocks will, as kids will, well, that's another matter entirely. And so you just simply don't lose it when you see that. Now, volume. Today's volume versus typical volume. Ma'am, what would you say about that? Today's volume versus typical volume. Is it big or small? First column near... Yes, good. You see why I said there that it was a quiet day on the street? We're going to see that with other stocks, too. Now, admittedly, this is on-balance volume. On-balance volume simply means that's what's on the books. There might have been trades that were happening in the background that aren't on the balance sheets of the buys and sells. But for the on-balance volume, I see that this was a very quiet day for JCPenney. Now, if I go to the other side, the market cap on this is $1.72 billion. In other words, the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. This is the market's assessment of the value of the equity in the company. This is not the book value. That's on the financial statements. Now, the EPS, okay, now, see if you remember, when I talked before, I mentioned price earnings ratio. And I said back in my time, we like to see it at a certain level, and then in more modern times, it's been a little higher. Do you remember the numbers that I was giving for what would be an earnings, a price earnings ratio that I would be comfortable with in the times now? Can you give me a ballpark? If you can't, don't worry. This is why I'm doing this, is to get you back into the flow of it. Do you remember what I said about what a price earnings ratio should be that would not make my hind leg go up and down? It would be in the 10s, 20s, 30s. I mean, anymore, no one loses it at 50. But I mean, we're seeing here 1,863.33. In other words, investors are paying $1,833 to claim $1 of residual cash flow in this company, basically. I mean, it's a technical term. That takes cajones. to do that. Don't write that down, for God's sake. Look, what I'm trying to tell you here is that's an insanely high price-earnings ratio. That's risk like you wouldn't believe. But interestingly enough, that beta is a false signal. That's a glitch. The beta is not 0.05 on JCPenney. So the only thing you've got to look at here is that price-earnings ratio. And that price-earnings ratio is the kind of price-earnings rate. That's the kind of risk you take when this guy you don't know at the bar says, here, take this pill. And he smiles. Okay? The sad part is I know guys who would have done, who would have taken it. You know, what he did to me really sucked, man. Okay. It's not paying a dividend. The target is $8.86 a share 1 year from now. Now, you know what? Ah, marker. Oh, okay. Now, let's imagine just for a moment here. Come on. Okay, now, that is $8.86 a share is the estimate by some person. You don't know who made this estimate. It could have been Warren Buffett. It could have been my cat, Phineas. And Phineas is actually pretty good at stock picking for a cat. I mean, he can't pick stocks, but for a cat, that's pretty good. $8.86. Now, it's $5.59 today. Okay, the price now is $5.59. The price in 1 year is estimated, is projected to be $8.89. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to calculate the capital gain and the capital gain return. I want to make a point here about the term, the wording. Most people, when they're talking about buying and selling stocks, when you're talking about taxes, capital gain means the dollar gain. But in finance, we would probably just say capital gain to talk about the return, the percentage. So I've got to be a little careful here, and I'm going to distinguish capital gain as the dollar amount from the capital gain return, which is the percentage amount. So now what I would do is I would say that the capital gain is going to be the $8.89 less the $5.59, which would be $3.30. That would be the dollar gain. Now, if you were with me and we were just talking in finance terms, I wouldn't stop there. I would say that it's the percentage. But in this class, I'll say the return, the capital gain return, is going to be that $3.30 divided by what you paid for the investment, $5.59. So in other words, that would be, if I were to work that out on the calculator, $3.30 divided by 5.59. What? No, that's right. That's a return of 59.03%. That's an insanely high return. And, of course, that explains why that price-earnings ratio is up there in... There are these different layers of clouds. There's the, you know, the atmosphere, the stratosphere, the ionosphere. Then there's the stupid sphere. That's up there in the stupid sphere. That's just ridiculously high. But you see, this is a highly risky stock. You're going to buy a round lot of these. In other words, you're going to pay $559 plus your commission, and you are going to probably take an absolute butt bath on this. However, this could return something like 59% on your investment. That is a profound. But remember what I said, the greater the risk, the greater the expected return. That's how it works. You want to roll the dice, here's Las Vegas in a stock screen. It's that big of a risk. Now, would I recommend you do it? I'm going to stay away from that one. That one's just plain scary. Wow. Just wow. That's okay. Okay, so now let's do another one. And yeah, go ahead.
Will the target estimate ever be like $3? Like, will it ever be lower?
Oh, it could be. I mean, JCPenney has a better chance of survival than Sears does, okay? Notwithstanding the fact that JCPenney is just closing one of its stores, and it's closing a bunch of stores, that's a bad sign in a way. When companies close their stores, they're consolidating, they're cutting costs, they're getting rid of stores that are non-performers. But at the same time, how far do you keep cutting before you are cutting off your future? Okay, the store isn't performing now. So when you close it, you have taken away the option to upgrade that store and make it something better in the future. You've just essentially, well, this finger's infected, let's cut off our hand. Okay, so there's that on the downside of the store closings. If I were to make a signal on this one, I'd say this is JCPenney. I mean, if you got a place in your portfolio for something that is stupidly risky, buy a round lot. Go for it. I mean, if it goes up, you're going to be up, you know, some pretty serious good money. But, I mean, you know, there are other investments that are better. Now, I'm going to go to another one here. We're going to go to Caterpillar. Now, is there any news about Caterpillar that's important recently? And what else?
The IRS.
The SEC, the IRS. You know, God himself came down. You pissed me off. Okay, here's the thing. Here is the thing. On the street, we were not impressed by the IRS raiding their facilities. We weren't impressed by the SEC's little monkeys going, unga, unga, They are just making smoke. I was in the business of stock brokerage houses when the state of Ohio put its deputy sheriffs up in every county with battering rams to smash down the doors of all the penny stock houses they could get their hands on, just to make a big show of how butch and tough they were, and it was nothing. They called me up and said, we got marshals or deputies on their way, we're going to smash down your doors. I said, I don't have doors. I said, there's a sliding glass. And they gave me a chance to send in a surrender of my license, or before they came, so I gave up my $10,000 bond. I lost my Series 7, my Series 24, my 27, just because the actors in the political ranks in Ohio wanted to show how butch and tough they were. That was what the IRS did with Caterpillar. It meant nothing, and I will show you what the market thought of that. Let's do a 5-year chart, okay? 5 years. Now, that raid happened about 2 months ago. Do you see any evidence of the zombie apocalypse on this stock 2 months ago? Do you see any massive black hole of the stock dropping down to where Satan lives with his minions and with the terrible people who make bad food at Chipotle? I shouldn't have done that. Okay, do you see evidence of a catastrophe 2 months ago? It's not there. the market didn't have a fit. Oh, God, the SEC. Oh, run, quake in your boots, fill your diaper, and run for the hills. No, it didn't happen. This is something that I want you to understand, and I'm trying to teach you a lot about things in a very short amount of time. Stay frosty. Don't let the media tell you that something horrible has happened. It didn't happen. It was just a bad day. In stocks and war, you don't lose your cool. That's how we handle the enemy. We create chaos. We make violent explosions, screaming noise, smoke, burning tear gas. We rout the enemy because they don't hold their position. And then when they start to run, we cut them down. That's what happens in the stock market. When you have people lose their cool, what you're doing is you run away from that. We're going to take your money away from you, and we're going to buy another martini for our lunch. Because it was the media that whipped that hysteria up, and there really wasn't anything there to worry about. That's something that you have to keep in mind. When you're dealing with stocks like this, think about what's going on. Look at what the market's players are saying. The market's players didn't lose their cool. You shouldn't either. You are not smarter than they are. I guarantee you that right now. Now, oh God, it just, why did they zero out the business? Okay. Now, there are reasons why you might want to have a look at this stock carefully. Madam. You look like a very intelligent stock trader. You could be one. Those thick black glasses, that's a trader. That says to me, back off her. She's a very powerful person. Okay, now, is this stock near its high or its low?
High.
Okay, the stock is near its high. So that means that this stock is, if it does, it's going to test on the high side. And I'm going to be interested to see if it makes it through that test. If it doesn't, okay, let's say that it doesn't make it through that. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask you, sir, if you were to make a buy, hold, or sell recommendation on this security, what would you do right now? What would your recommendation be? You'd sell. Ma'am, what would your recommendation be? Hold. Don't be afraid. If you're wrong, I'll say that was the stupidest ass thing I ever heard. No, I won't. But I need you to have courage. Have courage. Okay? I see the logic of a sell. My own self, I would probably concur with the hold position, although I wouldn't be averse to maybe paring back my Caterpillar holdings a little bit in the portfolio. But there's no reason to believe that there's a zombie apocalypse coming for this company. It's going to hit some rough territory. The big thing that I'm going to tell you to look at here is that this company is losing money. And I am so damn glad to see that. You see, because these were the Caterpillar people, the executives, who spoke to my finance students 4 years ago, and they said, we are making the transition from obsessing about net income and focusing on cash flow. And that's what you're seeing here. The company has stopped that. Oh, God, we've got to have a positive number at the bottom line of those accounting statements or we're dead. No. What matters is, do you have the money to pay your bills and to invest in new technologies and all of that and to expand your markets? That's cash flow. And in that regard, you can have a company that is having a negative net income year after year, but their cash flow is positive. And that means that I am seeing here a company, Caterpillar, that is going to have, see how it's negative earnings per share? That's the total earnings divided by the number of shares outstanding. This company's got 12 cents per share negative earnings. I look at this company and I see, Well, look at the P/E ratio. It doesn't even mean anything because that's a negative number. The earnings are negative. Its net income is negative. Therefore, the fool is going to believe that this is a disaster, but for most of us, it's a minor sell or a hold right now. We'll see how it comes out with this stock, but there's no reason to lose your water on this one. Now, notice that this stock has a very... Oh, well, let me do this. Okay, is this a very risky stock or a very safe stock? What would you call it? Risky stock or a safe stock?
Say safe.
It's actually risky. Look at the beta. What do you see for beta? A second column near the top.
1.61.
That is high risk. Because remember, the one is like the lever, the fulcrum for a the market portfolio. The entire economy has a beta of one. Above one, you are more volatile than the market. Below one, you're less volatile than the market. This at 1.61, that's not necessarily nosebleed, but you're beginning to feel a little twinge up there in your near your eyeball. This is very risky. So understand that this isn't all buy signal. I don't see a buy signal anywhere in there unless you really, really like risk. What I see is hold or pare back slightly on the stock on this one. That's just what I am, and that's a personal judgment based upon years of experience, and I'm trying to get you to see that same thing. Notice that the one-year target estimate, these analysts who are doing this seem to think this stock ain't going to go nowhere. It does, however, have an odd thing. This company is losing money on the books. In the accounting statements, this company is a disaster. Negative net income. But what do I see in that second column that makes it seem like that's weird? Why would I see that number there if this company is bleeding red? You see it? Yeah? They're paying a dividend. And they're paying a big dividend. I have $3 a share. You want a round lot of this, you're going to get a $308 a year check from this stupid company. I mean, that's weird. Why would they be paying? Oh, they're not in that much trouble. And remember I said a dividend is really mostly a signal. This company is throwing out a signal. We're okay. Here's some money for you. We're okay. Just be cool. Just relax. Don't lose your water. Don't piss all over yourself. This is going to all work out. And that dividend is their signal to the markets. They wouldn't do this. They're not stupid enough to throw money around that they don't have. If they are throwing around $3 a share dividend, they've got $3 a share that they don't need right now. That is a good sign. So we've got a mixed signal on this one, that there are some things that tell me this is a very risky stock. There are some things that tell me that it's going to be a survivor stock, but the picture is a lot more complex and somewhat more positive than what you see in the mainstream media and even in things like the Financial News Network. My God, the day the IRS raided them, the Financial News Network, they had one stupid talking head after another. Well, this is the end of that company. Where do you hire these people? Are these the people who worked at Six Flags, but then they were found out to be weirdos? Look, it's complicated. Now I'm going to take you to another one. And part of what I'm doing here, I've introduced you to the capital gain return. And now let's go over here and let's look at TGT. Now that is Target, for those of you who don't know that its real name is Target. I wish they wouldn't do the ask and bid ending. Will you stop? I hate this twitching ads. Anyway, okay. Was the volume above or below average for the day? First column down near the bottom. Really? Oh, goody, it flipped the screen, and now we get to have a Twitch ad again. Yep. Thank you. Okay, it's a quiet day. This was a quiet day on the street. You see that unbalanced volume is below the average, 52-week average. Again, you've got this all this stuff that just keeps telling me that this was just another quiet day on the street. Okay, now, previous close, all this kind of stuff. So we've got a little bit of continued buying activity on the plus side for this stock. Target. Yes, get off the moving ads. Okay, good. Okay, so now, market cap just shy of $30 billion. The 52-week range, is Target near the bottom or the top of its 52-week range? What do you see there? What do you see? Is Target near the bottom or the top of its 52-week range?
Bottom.
It's near the bottom. So here we have one of those that's testing its low. So if it survives the test of the low, that if it's seeing, the market's seeing if anyone has the guts to drop it through that 52-week barrier. And I don't see it right now. It's one of those things where the dogs are barking and nipping, but they're afraid to push it through that. So that's a good sign right there. Now, madam, is this a safe or a risky stock?
Safe.
Bingo. I mean, this is grandma's stock, 20.23 beta. I mean, you can't beat that if you want safety. Now, and that's confirmed by the P.E. ratio. That's a very low-risk P.E. ratio in this day and age. 11 is not very low, but it's a low risk. So P.E. ratio and the beta are both giving concurring signals on this. Now, so something else I was going to do here, too. Earnings per share at $4.70 a share. In other words, that's a lot of money per share. I mean, this company is doing very well at the bottom line. After it has satisfied its obligations to debt holders, the residual claim to the shareholders was $4.70 per share. And notice I'm bringing in this terminology again. I'm just going to keep saying the same things over and over again because that gives you the cultural cues that we use to say what we have to say in our terminology. So in other words, the residual claim was shareholders had was $4.70 a share. A brief point here about X dividend. If you buy a stock right before the dividend is the date of record, you'll get that dividend. That means that in the days moving up to that date of record, the stock price is going to go up to reflect the dividend. So in other words, if you buy a stock on the day before the date of record, it would be $2.40 higher than normal because you get that dividend immediately. And then right after the dividend date, the stock price drops back down because if you buy it then, you don't get that $2.40. So you're going to see this rhythmic cycle in stocks that pay dividends as you approach the date of record. In other words, if you're a shareholder on this date, you get the dividend. As you approach that date of record, you're going to see an upturn toward that dividend. And then right after the date of record, the stock price will drop down by that price of that dividend. So that's something that you just have to keep in mind. Here it looks like they just paid the dividend, so it's not really much of a term. In other words, what we're seeing is the price ex-dividend. In other words, that price of that value of that dividend isn't in there. Okay? Now, on this one, we've got two ways that you'll earn money. You will earn money from the gain on the stock price, and you will earn money on the dividend itself. So in this case, we've got the price now is $53.58. The price in 1 year is going to be, well, I shouldn't say that. The estimated price is going to be $62.77. Okay? So now, then you also have the dividend. And we're going to say that dividend is one period out, but we're not going to worry about that too much right now. The dividend is going to be $2.40. Now, you have just bought this stock. So what we're going to do is we're going to say the total return is the capital gain return plus the dividend yield. So you make money two ways on stock. Notice that stock that I did, what was it I did before? Was that pennies? JCPenney? They didn't have a dividend, so there's only one source of possible money you'll make on a stock like that. That's pure capital gain. Okay, on this one, there are two ways that you make money. So in this case, the capital gain would be the 6207 minus the 5358 over the 5358 plus the $2.40 per share dividend divided by the 5358. Those are the two things, the two pieces. So now we can go ahead and do the calculation of the total return that you could expect from this. On the first leg of the journey, you're going to have a 6207 less 5358, close the parentheses, divided by the 5358. You know what? Grr. Okay, let's try it again. Open parentheses. 62.07 minus 5358, close the parentheses, divided by 5358. 15.85%. So the capital gain leg is 15.85%. And the dividend yield is 240 over 5358, 4.48%. Now, actually, you notice that they gave the dividend yield actually up there in the screen. Do you see that? And mine is a little bit different. That's because they're probably calculating theirs on the price that's out there right now. I don't know. That's just my guess. Okay, this is the after-hours price. They probably used the 5364 instead of the 5358. I don't know how it was, but one way or the other, it's not much of a difference. So your total return here is 15.85 plus 4.48. 20.33%. That is a good return if it comes through. Do you see that? I mean, you're not going to get that on a savings account, on a CD. The thing, though, is that there's greater risk. But look at the risk of this stock. This is a low-risk stock paying that kind of a return. Okay, buy, hold, or sell. You got to say this with ferocity. Buy! You say, buy, fat boy, buy now. Okay, and then you pull the cigar out of your mouth and buy it right away. Okay, this is this kind of stock. Do you see that return? I mean, understand, there's no guarantee. Some hoe handle, 62 says it's 6207. We don't know whether this is a very good forecaster or a bad forecaster. The truth of the matter is, it could have even been my cat Phineas. He is actually pretty good at stock picking. For a cat. He can't pick stocks, but he's a cat, so it's good what he does. Anyway, yeah, I mean, actually, you got this thing near its 52-week low. You got this thing with the possibility of a very strong upswing on the capital gain and a decent dividend yield. I mean, even if the stock sucks, you got a 4.48% return just because you bought the stock. You're going to get a check in the mail. If you bought a round lot, you're going to get a check for $240 in a year. I mean, you can't beat that. You paid $5,358. That's basically, you put that in your bank, piggy bank, and 1 year later, out came a check for $240. If nothing else came out, which could have, if the stock goes top city. So the point I'm making here is that just a little bit of understanding of how to read stock screens can point you toward potential investment opportunities. It's just that, you know, you just got to know which one, how far you can push it. And remember, in a diversified portfolio, you take this stock on its own, and there's going to be substantial risk that you will take a bath on it. So always keep that in mind. Now, one last thing here, and it just drives me crazy that they're killing off the... Let me do something here. Okay, let me do AAPL stock. See if I can do Apple stock. Okay, come on. Google Finance, let's see if I can get it here. Gurr, I'm trying to find something that I'm not seeing here. That's Apple. I'm not seeing what I want. Let's try something else here. MSF. No, they're not doing it with this. Let me try something else here. I'm trying to show you something, and it's after hours, so they've cut off a lot of the information. Okay. See if they've still got it. Ah, thank God. And here we go with the stupid-ass ads again. Okay, now, here's what I'm going to point out to you. The stock went up from 141.42. It was a gainer day. You see again that evidence of the slow day in the market. You see the unbalanced volume is below the average. Investors are in a wait-and-see attitude. Earnings reports are coming out. The 10-Ks will be showing up for the companies that had the end of the year, calendar fiscal years. Now, the thing, interestingly enough, is that notice that this stock has a high beta. Apple is a risky stock. The P-E ratio is a little bit on the safer side than the beta is. Now, when you have a conflict between a beta saying, one of your indicators saying high risk and another indicator saying low risk, here's how you should think about that, okay? You are at a singles bar for finance majors, okay? Now, you got friends with you at this finance bar. And here comes in this financial analyst. And everyone gets really quiet. On this side, your friend is saying, he is totally, totally... And I stop. I'm totally Batman. You are saying he is a serial killer. Their students go missing. Okay, admittedly, they were not very good students, you know, things like that. Oh. Anyway, okay, so he's saying I'm great. She's saying I'm a serial killer. Who are you going to be more likely to take into consideration?
The serial killer.
Bingo, you see. Exactly. And that's one of those things that you always have to do when you're looking at data. You look at the worst. And that is the game theory strategy. It's called mini-max strategy. You look at the maximum loss scenario, and you construct a strategy that minimizes that maximum loss. That is how you survive. It's game theory, it's combat, it's economics, it's finance. I see one thing that says, oh, happy days. Oh, looky there. It's some nice person with a balloon. And I also see there also, wait a minute, that person with that balloon, that's a clown. And clowns need to die. Okay? So I would take the risky signal there. That's the one. That's a high beta. You got a stock that looks like it's not going to go anywhere over the next year. You got a nice dividend payment, but that's all you might get out of this stock. Apparently, the market, and there are a lot of people say, Apple has nowhere else to go. It's got its Apple Mackie freaks, and they are not they don't breed as fast as normal people do because they just don't know how to. They're too busy playing with their Macs. And I shouldn't do that. Don't slash my tires, Mackies, please. Okay, but the point is, where is its innovation? Where is the edge? Steve Jobs was a screaming, violent, hateful, nasty son of a bitch. Once he was gone, the last thing that Apple had that was good about it died with him. The last positive thing that could have taken them on just by the sheer force of his personality is gone. You see it right there. This is a stock that is actually risky. And I would probably say that this is either a hold or a sell stock. Unless all you want is to spend $14,142 to get a check at the end of the year for $228. Seriously, that's what you're seeing there. Now, I want to bring up something, though, that's not about Apple specifically. When you buy a stock, one of the things that's funny is all get out about these people who do these stock simulations. Well, I bought this stock, and I made like 13 cents a share on 1,000 shares, so I made a decent day here. No, you didn't, because you see, there are two things that are going to take away money from you. You are going to buy this stock at $141.39. You are going to be able to sell the stock at $141.33. So right away, whenever you buy a stock, you have got to climb out of the spread between bid and ask. Every time you buy a stock, you have already lost money the minute you say buy. Again, as soon as you buy a stock, you have lost money immediately because you cannot sell the stock for the same price you bought it at. That's the bid-ask spread. You have to climb out of a pit. And the pit is even worse than that because you have to pay a commission. You have to pay a commission. So you're going to have to climb out of the bid-ask spread pit, And you're going to have to pay a client out of the commission. Well, I've got a low commission broker. Good for you. You're still paying a commission. And there's a third thing that's going to happen, too, if you're one of those people who spends your whole life looking at stock screens. You have just spent your whole life looking at stock screens. The opportunity cost of what you have done. It's like the guys, there used to be a company called Heathkit. You could buy a box and it had a TV in it, or a radio, or something like that. You put it together. So you'd have these guys bragging about, well, I put together a TV, a color TV, and it saved me. Instead, I bought the box for $150 instead of paying $300 for the TV. No. You lost a ridiculous amount of money because it took you over 200 hours to put that TV together. You didn't save a dime. You lost money doing that, Sparky. And this is the same thing here. When you say, okay, I spend my life looking at stocks, I say to you, what could you have been doing instead? Oh, you could have been making $10, $15, $20 an hour, cupcake. Instead, you were staring at stock screens. So always keep that in mind, that there is this hole you're in. From the time you buy the stock, you are in a hole climbing out. And so in this case, you know what? This stock is not really worth it for me. This is a sell stock on my end. One last one real quick.
What is that on the bed in the ass? What is it times 300 times 1?
Ignore that. I'll deal with that later. It just... Thank you for asking that, because I do have to go over that. It means different things. In this case, notice you got a bid of 400 and an ask of 700. That generally means simply how much volume you have to get that price. Okay? 4 round lots, 7 round lots. You follow that? And by the way, I should point out, the more you buy, the better your deal is going to be, almost always. And I need, oh, God, I'm glad. Boy, I'm sure glad you brought that up. It's not related, but know this. I am showing you your best case scenario. It's not going to be this good because dividends are taxed at your ordinary tax level. Tax rate, marginal tax rate. So in other words, if you're in the 25% marginal tax bracket, your dividend is going to be taxed 25%. You lose 25% of it right there. And that isn't even the state and city tax. That's gone right away. Now, the capital gain is taxed at a lower rate. So there is a feature of our tax code that tends to encourage investment more in capital gains than in dividends. In other words, there's a punishment in our tax code for people who just want to have money to feed themselves with. They want to put their money into stocks and get dividends. Well, we're going to tax your sorry butts at a higher rate than those fancy Wall Street boys who go for the high risk, high capital gain, zero dividend stocks. You see that? But it's even worse than that, because there is a provision of our tax code that makes these guys who do these insanely large incomes, they make anywhere from $100 million to $1 billion a year, they are taxed at a special, special low rate because they are so powerful they can buy every senator, Republican or Democrat, and make sure that this happens. It's one of the most ridiculous things on earth. But there you go. Now, to even confuse it further, as I said, your ordinary dividends are taxed at a higher rate than your capital gains are. However, there's a provision in the tax code that punishes companies that don't pay dividends. It's called, they say it's an excessive retention of earnings. In other words, they're trying to force companies to pay dividends so that the people who get the dividends pay their pay tax on them instead of plowing the earnings back into the company. And so the whole IRS thing is just all over the insane board on this kind of stuff. On the one hand, your dividends are taxed more than your capital gains. On the other hand, companies are punished if they don't pay dividends after a certain number of years and they're making money. So, and then, on the other hand, capital gains are taxed at an extraordinarily low rate for the wealthiest of the wealthy in this country on Wall Street. So there you go. It's all kinds of complicated and all kinds of crap, but that's, you know, there you go. That's business in the 21st century. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.